Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about optimism. And, you know, we announce the topics ahead of time, and so you all get to ask questions and think about it. And quite a few people talked about the fact that they didn't have much optimism because, well, we've got the pandemic going in the world, the coronavirus, right? Yeah. And it's hit the United States kind of hard, but it's hit every place kind of hard. And I know this is an international show, so you're all from different places, but we can all agree on the fact that it's, well, kind of a bad thing, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't have some optimism in our lives, and especially optimism about our negotiations, about our people. Yes, even though, and it is true, it is, well, I'm not going to say it's harder, but it's different to do negotiation, to do alternative dispute resolution, to do everything online now. Because we used to, like, sit in a room and talk to each other and watch each other and kind of feel the temperature of the group dynamic and like that. And it is a different act to do it on a computer screen, even though we can do gallery view and we can see everybody. But still. And, yeah. And it's a different mindset to be able to do that. But, hey, we're flexible people and we're excellent leaders. And we still know quite a bit about people, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. The you know, that is a good point. I don't see it so often professionally because I deal with a lot of corporations and people aren't using well, sometimes they are nowadays, come to think of it. But people have fairly good equipment because they're used to talking online. I'm fairly used to it, too, in all truth and honesty, because that's how we get the international people together. And sometimes there's some people in the room, but sometimes some people are on the screen, right? And it is true that there's a somewhat of an amount of technical difference, technology, really, between different places and different people speaking. And sometimes it is hard to hear people. And if you need an interpreter because everybody needs to speak, for example, English, but not everybody does, they used to sit in the room and do it, but now they're kind of next to the person. And if it's not clear, and you need, of course, those ear pod things so that you can hear well, but if it's not clear and people are kind of straining and you don't know what people are saying, you need to tell people, right? Yeah. You need to have them correct it. You need to let them understand that they're really not coming in very clearly. And they need to, yeah. And this is also kind of complicated too, but sometimes they need to call in and not so much video in, because they just don't have the bandwidth for it. Mm-hmm. I see this a lot with church and other things that are truly just folk doing it, right? And some of them are not such young folk, and some of them are people that for whom English is not their first language, and like that, and they look down at something. And it's a little bit, there's some technology difference in the quality of the what's coming through the computer screen. Yeah. And that's to be taken into account. And I tell people, I say, oh, please, could you kind of look up and also, if you're going to type, you need to mute, right? Because we can hear you. That's what it really is. Yeah. And so people don't know that. And in all truth and honesty, when I did the first one, just a private one with my church, from my house, because I'm not usually there. I'm not usually in that spot. I was using an iPad. I didn't realize until somebody told me, and I wanted to know, that the air purifier behind me, it's a little machine that makes a humming noise like a vacuum. And I don't think anything about it because I'm used to it. It just makes a little background noise. It was making a noise on my Zoom that was annoying other people. I was making a humming noise. Yeah, and I didn't realize it. So you got to tell people, and you got to think about stuff like that and hope that somebody tells you, because I did not realize that I was making an annoying background noise. But it was picking up because it was directly behind me. Yeah. But it's on the floor. Yes, I wouldn't have thought about it. So there you go. Mm-hmm. So I think we have stuff to be optimistic about because we're going to reach successful outcomes. And there's life after the coronavirus, for heaven's sakes. We're going to get a handle on it. And science will figure out something to do about it, some sort of a treatment. Right? Yeah. So we're going to be fine, God willing. Yeah. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you notice I qualified my optimism, but hey, we can handle this. Mm-hmm. So what do we as leaders need to be optimistic about within our context, within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a negotiation, a mediation, whatever it is we're doing that's going to get people together to do something good, like have a successful outcome, right? Yeah, and that's one of the things we can be optimistic about. That we're going to have a successful outcome, that this is going to work out. We're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I'm going to call this a strong group dynamic, that we can all get along. Right, strong group dynamic, that we can help create this and it will take hold. Right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times we see, at least I see people, who are not there so voluntarily. And they're kind of like, oh, God, another extracurricular obligation. Jeez, that kind of a thing. Primarily because they are a certain level of employment in a corporation or whatever, or group, and that level is supposed to work something out, right? And then enforce it and stuff. But, yeah, so they're part of a generic group. But pretty soon we're going to have a strong group dynamic, and they're going to go, yeah. I'm glad that I am part of this because it's important. Yeah, I'm glad I'm part of this because it's important, right? Strong group dynamic. We're going to be optimistic about respect and the civility rules, too, that we can do this, that it's going to, that we're going to have them more than anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true, too. We're going to be optimistic that we can reach an understanding, that we can go forward to a successful outcome, yes, but also that in order to do that, we're going to have some empathy. We're going to have some. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. So that's us as leader. What do our participants have to be optimistic about? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that they're in our group. That's a good point. That they've gotten into the cool kids group, right? Yeah. That this is the A team. We're gonna get this done. Yeah. And a lot of times people know this because other people, which is called peer approval, other people say, "Wow, you're in Sue's group. I wish I was in that group." Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the psychology. If you ever see nowadays, well, yeah, still I see it. But nowadays we're not doing in-person workshops at the moment. But sometimes you have sign-up sheets, actual sheets, or even digital ones. And people gravitate towards and run towards the ones that have the most sign-ups because they figure other people must know something, right? Yeah. And that's why you've got some that are overflowing, like ours, and some that are nobody because they're unknown quantities and nobody signed up for them. Yeah. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's group mentality to a certain extent. But, yeah, it's good, though. It shows that you're the cool group. You're the good one. Mm-hmm. People can be optimistic that they're going to be part of a team, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be everybody's going to give their best efforts, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with being optimistic that you might meet somebody, right? Nothing wrong with that. That's what teams are. They're people that you get to meet. I don't necessarily mean romantic, although that has happened. I mean business-wise, even. Somebody that you didn't know wouldn't have really run across within your social circles or whatever. And there we are, and now we know each other, and now we know that we can get along, that we can work something out, so that the next time we have, I don't know, some sort of a thing that needs to be done, we know who to call. We know who we can work with, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And, yeah, you might meet somebody romantically, too, but networking is a kind of an all-encompassing concept of I get to be in the good group, and the good group is full of good people, and I would like to know these people, and they would like to know me. Yeah, so it works out extremely well. Optimistic about the process, too, right? That this group is organized, the leader knows what he or she is doing, right? And I understand what I'm supposed to do. You know, that's half the battle. Because most people are going to give it their best shot. But they're not quite sure what it is they're supposed to do. How are they supposed to know what's their best shot? Right? Yeah. No. We're going to be optimistic, but we're going to really, really give it a good go. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that they are able to ask questions, too. That's also the key to it. I'm allowed to ask questions. I can get clarification, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and remember that the process is also you, leader, or your staff, hopefully, keeping track, right? So that we know that everybody is working on it. And they're all doing what they're supposed to be doing, and haven't kind of veered off funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to keep track of it. I think both the leader and the participants can be optimistic about the media response, right? Yeah. A lot of times we do attract media. A lot of times nowadays it's not hard to attract media because media is such a big word. It involves all kinds of social media and all kinds of bloggers and stuff like that who have an interest. Yeah. And we're going to talk about having a media spokesperson, right? Yes. And not having people just blog and stuff on their own while we're in the process. No. We're not going to do that. We're not done yet. We don't know how it's going to come out, right? And we don't want to be misquoted. Always remember that the media creates public opinion. The media creates public opinion. Mm-hmm. So let's get into this. Let's talk about ourselves, leaders first. Mm-hmm. We're optimistic about a successful outcome. Order to have one. Yes, thank you. Lee and others are ahead of me. In order to have a successful outcome, you've got to define success. How are you going to know if you've got it if you don't know what it is? You've got to define what success looks like, right? Right. Which leads us to the question, who is going to define this magic word? Who is going to decide what success looks like? Yeah, who's going to decide that? A lot of times, initially, it's the employer. Now, in this show, everybody remember, in this show, we use the word term employer as a generic. It does not necessarily indicate an actual employment relationship. Whoever it was that had the smarts to bring you in as leader, we're going to call them the employer, right? I don't care what the actual relationship is. The employer. It's a generic for whoever it is that brought you in and that you might report to in some manner or is taking an interest, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Usually, and report is kind of a big word. It's not necessarily on paper, this is what we've been doing, boss, type thing. It might be very informal, but it's somebody who's taken an interest and has brought us in. Not necessarily someone who pays us, although that would be nice too. I like to be paid. Mm-hmm. So initially, when we're brought in and we say, what's the problem? They define what they would like to have done about the problem, and that's defining success. First thing you need to know is that they've really got that down, that they've really thought about it, because otherwise, if nobody knows what success looks like, you will never reach it because no one will ever be satisfied. They'll figure that ain't it. Yeah. And also, they need to be flexible. Because what success looks like at the very beginning before we do any kind of negotiation or research or bring in any experts or do anything might look different when we end up, when we find out the practicalities of this, when we figure out what needs to be done and we do it, right? Yeah. And that's the first point. It might got to be flexible, got to understand that the definition is not definite. Oh, all right. Sometimes the definition is definite. Get on the ballot. We need, 500,000 signatures. Get on the ballot, right? Yeah, see, that's definite. And we all understand that that's the success. But what happens after that may need to be defined, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Who else helps define success? How about us, the leader? We might help the employer initially to understand that what they're defining, for example, is too broad. It needs to be made more specific so that we know which direction we're heading in, right? Yeah. Make it work is not a good definition. How is the question to that? How do you suggest, right? The group might help to define what success looks like. Your participants and you, and our interactions with the outside world, maybe even with opposition, right? Mm-hmm. Media often defines what success looks like because they, of course, the media, and I include everything in that, create public opinion. The public doesn't know what they think until somebody tells them what they think. Yeah, it's marketing in a certain sense. Well, all right, people have core moral values, but basically speaking, you need help, and the media is there to help, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a common question that Margaret and others are mentioning gets asked of them. A lot of times the employer, especially at the beginning, this is not an unreasonable question, wants to get an idea about how long and how much. How long it's going to take and how much money is it going to cost, right? Now, you are fairly experienced, and quite frankly, we do get specialties, so we're kind of experienced in whatever field it is that we're now talking, right? You are fairly experienced, so you have an idea, right? Because that's what they're asking you. You're the expert. You're the leader. You've been called in. Now, sometimes this is impractical. And I like to, first of all, know about the time part. I like to know if it's an actual deadline, as in something must be filed, must be put on record at a certain time, or it is a wish-type timeline that says, I wish this would get done so I could check it off my list, but it's not desperate, right? I don't like soft deadlines like that. If we're going to do a deadline, it needs to be a real one, and there needs to be a reason for it. Otherwise, we don't need the deadline. We're going as fast as we can. We're not lallygaggling. You know what I mean? We're doing it. We've got this. We're working on it. The reason being is that a soft deadline will get pushed. And you won't be able, if you can't make it, it'll be all right to give you 6 more months. It doesn't mean anything, and it's not good to have a deadline that just evaporates when everybody's been working towards the deadline. Got it? Got it. Yeah. I estimate bigger than I think. both time and money as a habit, as a negotiation tool, really. The reason being is that if you come in less time and under budget, it's fabulous for your reputation, right? Yeah. People say things like, Sue, last time Sue came in under time and under budget. Whoa, fabulous. Uh-huh. Okay, that's a point. Thomas and others are saying that sometimes you have a budget and you need to use it all because next time they're going to say you don't need so much because last time you didn't need it. Maybe. You have to make that decision. If that is true, and if we've really come in under budget and under time, I announce that it's just because we're geniuses, right? And, you know, there's no problem. We like to celebrate each success when we do something good because it makes everybody understand how far we've come. Well, let's spend some time and money celebrating success. Why not? Excuse me, took a sip of liquid. Yeah, why not? Okay, I confess. There's some of you who have actually seen me in person and like that and been in groups. In fact, I think quite a few. And we once went with a corporate group. I won't say which corporation. But we had some budget left over and some time. And it was one of those team-building things where you go all together and you have a leader. It was fashionable at the time, and everybody wanted to do it. I didn't personally think it was a good idea. I'm more the let's all go to a nice treat type thing. And not first of all, it was too much togetherness, too many nights away from home together for a variety of reasons. It created friction. And, yeah, it wasn't a good idea. What do they call those? Power training? Is that what it's called? No. I forgot what it was called. It was one of those team-building exercises. It wasn't forever. It was like 3 days. It was very expensive. You went to a, essentially speaking, camp to do it. I didn't like it for the reason that I don't like, I don't like a lot of those things. I was going to say for the reason that I wouldn't like Peloton, which is the thing that I've just seen. That bicycle thing where it's very, very expensive and you have an on-screen person that yells at you and belittles you and people kind of compete against each other on screen. Yeah, it's popular at the moment because we're all in quarantine, right? And you don't actually go to a gym. So I know people that are doing it. And I looked at it and I went, ooh, I didn't want to do that. There's a reason for it, obviously. I'm not so young and not so thin, and I'd probably be the last one. But that's not the problem with it. The problem with it is I don't like those experience training things because you get a person who's the leader of it, who kind of yells at people like a drill sergeant and creates competition and friction, and I don't see the point. I'm more the all let's go and eat something delicious in a nice restaurant and celebrate our success and take cabs home. Because we're going to be too drunk to drive. Yeah, no, I'm more that because everybody has an equal good time. It's the reason that I don't do competitions within the negotiation either. I'm not big on pitting people against each other. I have it's just not my style. I just don't think it's a good idea. I think that it creates animosity. I think that it creates people who feel superior and people who don't feel so superior, and they don't have as good a time. That's not respectful. See, I like civility. I like a good group dynamic. I think we should all be equal eating pizza and not unequal doing something competitive, right? Yeah. That is just my leadership style is that. Now, I know some of you do competitive very successfully, and I respect that. I think it's a good idea if that's your style. It's just not my style. Yeah. Because it's just everybody has a personal style, and that one's not mine. But some of you do it extremely well. I have seen it done with a great deal of success. So it's not a bad thing. It's just not my style to do it. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... No, I don't do role-playing in the real world either. You've seen me do it maybe on a seminar, but that is an enclosed theoretical. I don't do it in real life because role-playing, R-O-L-E, it takes somebody else aside and argue it and like that, could become insulting, could become embarrassing, right? Yeah, think about that. And no, it's not something that I do. In play, in theoretical, in a classroom, maybe, because that's different, right? Yeah, that's teaching negotiation strategy. We do it there, but not in real life. Mm-hmm. So group dynamic, now that we've talked about that, which is our next thing, we're optimistic about our convivial and respectful atmosphere, right? Yeah, a convivial and respectful atmosphere. That's why we don't do the competition thing in my groups. Do it if that's your style. It is a successful type of negotiation on certain things. Yeah, it has that kind of natural competition to it, like selling things, for example. Mm-hmm. So a convivial and respectful atmosphere is, I'm optimistic that we can have that. You should be too. What are we going to need? Yes, thank you. We're going to need the civility rules. Mm-hmm. For those of you who have new or forgotten, the civility rules are very simple. They're the only rules the Recipe for Peace now has. They're deceptively simple. They're kind of like a lot of things in real life, you have to really enforce them. Basically speaking, the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. excuse me. Oh, I'm allergic to uncivility. Hang on a second. We all know I'm going to blow my nose. Excuse me. This is a live show. Yes, we know this. You can't even cut pieces out of it. You just have to, well, stick around. Hang on. Oh. Oh. Well, really. Hello, I'm back. just like real life. The civility rules basically say we will not be rude to each other. You flesh that out according to the situation because you're an excellent leader. But that is the process. No, we're not going to be rude to each other. And I personally, and I think you should too, I announce the civility rules at the beginning of each group. Whenever we get together, right? And if you're a good group, they all roll their eyes and say, well, you know, and they're not going to do it. But I like to have them enforced anyway. And you need to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Don't let civility get away from you is the key to it. If things go uncivil, hard to get back. You can't say, whoa, I haven't enforced the civility rules in a month, but remember the civility rules, we're going to do it now. It could be done, but why? No, we're going to do it immediately, consistently, and fairly. Mm-hmm. Now you're thinking to yourself, that's nice. But they're only words, and I've seen groups where people have bullies in them. Or maybe someone with a hidden agenda for failure. I see those a lot. Yes, a hidden agenda for failure. They'd like the group to fail. So they're being disruptive and nasty and ruining your group dynamic. And they know about the civility rules. And I have actually had this question said out loud, but even if it's not said out loud, this is the implied reply. What you gonna do about it if I'm not civil? What you gonna do about it? Yeah, what you gonna do about it? I don't want to be civil. You need to have a good answer to that. And the good answer comes from the employer. Remember, it's a generic term. The good answer comes from whoever it is that can enforce a penalty. Right? Right. If everybody in the group is a certain level of employment, how'd you like to be demoted? Right? If you can't give it your best effort and work together. Maybe you're not supervisory material. Might be a monetary penalty, some sort of a privilege penalty, some sort of a penalty that makes a difference. I was going to say that's big, but not necessarily, because you've got some peer pressure too. But you because you of course want everybody to know that you weren't kidding about the penalty, right? Took a sip of coffee there. There we go. And so it needs to be fitting, whatever the penalty is, and the employer needs to really do it. Before I take on a group, I like to get the civility rule violation penalties in writing so that I can enforce them, so that they can be seen, so that the employer can't wiggle out is what it really is, right? Right. Because you need their backing. Yes, in order to have civility rules, you as leader must be a model of civility. A model of civility, right? Yes. And sometimes, all right, I haven't done this in a really long time because it's not my nature. But sometimes it's been a long day. Somebody really pushes your buttons. And you lose civility. I have seen it happen. Oh, not good. We're going to assume that you have not done something so egregious that you need to recuse yourself and stomp out of the room. No. You need to apologize. You need to acknowledge that you have not properly modeled civility, and it's your one-time warning before penalty. Or maybe you should pay the penalty if you've done it more than once. Right? Right. Now, we're talking about the group dynamic and optimism, being optimistic about it's going to go well and everybody's going to have respect and like that. When we talk about that, we need to also think about the invisible participants. Now, we're going to talk about empathy in a minute, but it goes towards everything too, towards empathy also. But sometimes you've got people, organizations, whatever, participants, who are not in the room but are influencing those who are, right? Yeah. They're kind of, well, they've got expectations about what your participant is going to be able to accomplish. Sometimes the participant's kind of even reporting to them, not necessarily, you know, typing up a sheet, but kind of telling what's happening and like that. And sometimes the invisible participants are indeed very important because they go to different ties that your actual participant respects, right? And they're not in the room. We need to find out about them. And I like to invite them in. Right? Yeah. This goes with our understanding, with our empathy, which is going to be our next one. I know it's out of order. Acquisition of knowledge was next. But we're going to do it. It'll be fine. And empathy and understanding. Because we want to know who is having an impact and whether or not they'd like to participate. No, actually, the question is being asked if invisible participants and anonymous participants are the same. The answer is no, oftentimes at least, no. The reason, well, Okay, but they're serving different purposes. The invisible in the actual, I can't tell you who they are part is the same. The invisible participants are influencing your participants and influencing how they react to things, right? The anonymous ones are people who have an opinion. They want the group to know about it because they usually approach the leader, but they don't want anybody to know that they helped. Yeah, they're in favor of whatever it is you're doing, and they have usually a really valid idea, somebody that you can talk to, somebody, something that you should know is what it really is. But they don't want you to use their name. They don't want to be known that they helped. Yeah, the reason is not nefarious. You're like, are they criminals? No. Usually, they're not on the run, no. Usually, they are people who are in the field, in employment, and they're people in a position that's good, like a position of power, and they think that whatever it is you're doing would be a good thing. They think that change is inevitable and it's a good idea. But they don't want to disturb the status quo because they're pretty well placed, just in case you don't make it. Right? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. They like it to change, but just in case your group doesn't make it, they don't want to be stuck in, I told you, I was on their side. Right? Yeah, no. You must not divulge your sources. You must not divulge who the anonymous participants are. If you do, no one will ever trust you again. They'll have no respect for you. Why would they? Right? Yeah. So we're going to have some empathy, some understanding all the way around, right? Even for the anonymous or the invisible. And we are going to ask, in order to get this empathy, because we're practical people, we're going to engage in asking the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Because it gets down to the nitty-gritty. It gets down to what's really going on. It gets down to, well, who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? Why did they think that? Or some equivalent thereof. Yes. People are asking if you ask them all in that order. Not necessarily. Do you ask it in front of everybody? Not necessarily. That's a judgment call, right? Yeah. But somewhere along the line, you want the answers to the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Because that's how we're going to achieve understanding. That's how we're going to achieve consensus, and that's how we're going to get some compromise. People understand what's really important, and we all agree on that, and the rest of it's kind of the details. We'll work on those, right? Yeah. Correct. And yes, you can always be optimistic that we're going to gain understanding. You'd be surprised. Sometimes I see groups that are very not pleased to be working with each other, oftentimes because of a preconceived notion. Sometimes a really ingrained preconceived notion, like a bias that they acquired at childhood or from their social or ethnic groups or whatever. Yeah, It's like I say at the beginning of each show, you don't have to be friends. You have to be willing participants, right? And in order to do that, we're going to take that preconceived notion, that preconception, that bias, and we're going to think, not that I don't have it anymore, that's not our job as leader, but we're going to think, well, this person in this group at this time is exceptional and unlike the others. That'll do. We can work with them. We can understand them. we can reach agreement. We can work with, we can work together in the future. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Don't have to be friends, just willing participants, right? Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing we can be optimistic about as leaders, I know we went a little out of order, is the acquisition of knowledge. Nowadays, of course, the internet exists, which is a blessing. I mean, it's really fabulous. I remember the days before the internet, they were the dark days, dinosaurs. Oh, no, never mind. And but the thing about the internet is that no matter what kind of a crazy, strange, unlogical, unreasonable, weird idea you've got and justification for it, you can pretty much find an entire group on the internet that thinks exactly the same thing and backs you up. So what you need to do is you need to have teamwork, and you need to research everything, not just quit when you reach the stuff that agrees with you, because you want to know what's out there. You want to know what the arguments are. You want to know, well, the thing that I hate the most, well, I don't like many things about stuff, but one of the things I dislike the most is the unintended consequences. Unintended consequences. We didn't even know you were there. Didn't know you existed. Impacted you in some negative way. Unintended consequences. We want to not have those. So we want to research all sides, and we need to call in some experts. I call in an expert at the very, towards the very end to take a look at what we've done and what we're about to do, and see if it's a good idea or if he or she has some recommendations, right? Yeah. A lot of times I like competing experts. Yes, some of you have seen me do this. I do. I like to know all sides so we don't have unintended consequences, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of compete with each other. It's good. Then you can really see the arguments, can see what's going on. This is a good question. The question is being asked, who do I call in as an expert? Hang on. The answer is that I personally like as experts people who have done it, who have been in the field, who have hands-on experience, right? I do. It's my preference. I even think that people who failed in the past make interesting experts because they can tell us what they did that didn't quite go so well. And they can even make an analysis of whether or not circumstances has changed. Because a lot of times that has happened too. Circumstances have changed. And what they failed at before, they would have been successful with today. Mm-hmm. Well, today being weird, yeah. People are circling back to the coronavirus. We're living through interesting times. But it doesn't make it, but human nature and circumstances and like that, circumstances will change when we get out to the other side of this, right? Yeah. I predict that we will do more technology, more meetings through the computer, more negotiation through the computer, more workshops and seminars, right? Yeah. And not so much traveling and going someplace to do it, but really doing it with economy of time and of money. Because let's face it, it's dirt cheap to just use Zoom or Skype or some other platform. Yeah, it's cheap. It doesn't cost anything except some time. And you don't have to go anyplace. And you can sit there with your cup of coffee and like that. And there's networking's negligible, but you can see each other, you can talk, right? Yeah. And maybe reconnect. Yeah, so it's actually pretty darn smooth. I gotta admit that. Yeah. We may actually do more and more of it. Mm-hmm. It works well for certain applications. And we were half computer anyway, because people don't come from other countries and like that. It's too long a slog. Well, sometimes they do, but it kind of depends. But anyway, yeah. So I think that circumstances will change, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like experts who have done it. The employer, remember it's a generic, and the media, I think that's a generic too, come to think of it, both like people with a lot of credentials. I personally don't think it makes you any smarter or any better, but it is impressive when you go to quote it. Yes, this is true too. I don't know if we can call that I think of it more as media and marketing, but I suppose this is an expert endorsement in its way. Sometimes groups get a celebrity endorsement, right? Yeah. Hopefully somebody who is actually taking an interest and has kind of stature for having done it before and is, I think of it more as a celebrity spokesperson as a marketing tool. I have vetoed some over the years because I don't think much of just hiring a talking head that's famous to say something about what you're doing, right? Because then people will follow them. I like them to be actually sincere, which is tougher. Actually interested, actually doing something, right? Yeah. Otherwise, they eventually just shrug their shoulders and say, well, it's just a job. I got paid. When the media follows them around. And then the whole thing kind of goes south because it's like, I don't care. I got paid lots of money. That's what I care about, money. You see, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're not experts necessarily then. I guess they could be. But I'm not real big on just hire somebody that doesn't care and put words in their mouth. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So what do our participants have to be optimistic about now that we've talked about ourselves? Yes, that they're in the right group. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They know this because they get peer approval. People go, whoa, you're in Sue's group. I wish I was there, right? Yeah. There might be a resume enhancer if you're kind of young and need that kind of thing, right? I participated in this group. I saw how it was done. We came to a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And I dealt with all kinds of people that were not like me, which is also a good resume enhancer. Networking opportunity? Yeah, why not? Any kind of a group is a networking opportunity. And you might have chosen, the participants might have chosen the group in order to, for example, hear a speaker and be able to meet him or her kind of close up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really maybe make a connection and, I don't know, press their card into the guy's hand, a woman's hand. But it's kind of a connection. It's one of the I see this actually every week. It's one of the charms of Rotary. I'm a Rotarian. You all know that. Well, some of you know that. And we have a weekly meeting with a speaker, right? Even now we do it on Zoom. But we have a weekly meeting with a speaker. And it's interesting, and it also brings out people to the speaker, especially, who you might like to be interested to meet, might like to make the acquaintance of, right? Yeah. And there they are. They made a little speech. Now they're having lunch and like that. And a lot of times they're kind of professionally, important. And you would have to make a big appointment and stuff in order to see them, right? So a lot of times these groups have somebody like that, or they have a speaker, for example, and it's good networking, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Participants can also look forward to a team mentality. I'm not alone in this. I am working with a team, right? Yeah. And we want to turn around our prior failures, right? So that we can make a team dynamic. Right? Yeah, and that's partially why we celebrate each success. So that we can really make a team dynamic. I feel that I'm part of something bigger. Something good that's bigger. That seems good. Pardon me. I think that the participants feel really optimistic when they understand that there is a celebration for each success, each step, right? Yeah. This is a fun group. This is nice. We've worked really hard, but everyone appreciates it. Understands the amount of effort that's been put in, right? The amount of thought, the amount of negotiation, the amount of empathy and understanding, right? Yeah. Also, the participants need to feel comfortable within the process, right? Yeah. We have a rule that if you're going to pass something around, something of importance, that is interesting for our next meeting, for example, you do it ahead of time so that we don't have people sitting in the meeting reading something and trying to assimilate what on earth it is that I have just read and how it relates to anything that we're doing, right? I don't want to see the tops of your heads. I want to see your eyeballs. So we want to have process that everyone understands not to do such a thing, right? Process where you can ask a question. Process where you can get an explanation. Yeah, where you can test, am I doing this right? Is this what you had in mind, right? Yeah. And with that process comes somebody to keep track, right? Yes. Now, it might be you keeping track when you're first in the business because you don't have that much stuff to do. But once you get busy, pardon me, took a sip of liquid. Once you get busy, you won't have time for the picky you and process stuff, the real day-to-day keep track. You need somebody to do that, a day-to-day keep tracker. I think if it is possible, you should have a paid person, someone who's really their job, right? Yeah. And not just a bunch of folk kind of off on their own, because the paid person will be able to really watch and see that everything gets put together, everything gets done, and we're all on the same track. Interns and like that are lovely, but they leave. See, the paid people stay. It's their job, and they like it. They're like us. But the interns and like that, they're only there for a very short time. By the time they get good at it, they're almost gone. So it would be good to have a paid person. Also, the paid person can answer some questions because we've got some what they call frequently asked questions, right? But people ask basically the same things, and the paid person will know. And the interns first training themselves. Yes, we have interns because it's good for the community. Good for us, too. Especially when we need extra all hands on deck for like a workshop or a seminar, which we've now discussed are going to be online. Oh, my goodness, my interns can be online. The other thing that everybody can feel kind of optimistic about, we're going to run out of time, is a favorable media response, right? No comments privately, right? Because it's going to be quoted out of context. Besides, what you think now is not necessarily what's going to be the final thought, the final decision when we get all done, right? Yeah. We should have a media spokesperson, right? The media spokesperson, like the expert, I think should be somebody who really understands what we're doing, but media and bosses and leader and employers really like credentials. They just do, right? Yeah. And so sometimes you pick someone who's kind of media impressive, even though they might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, right? Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember always that the media makes public opinion. And the media likes to see degrees, so do employers. The spokesperson might be you as leader because you're a logical choice. You should determine, really in your own mind, too, if you are actually the best fit for that or somebody else in the group would be better, right? Yeah. Somebody else in the group would be a better media spokesperson. It's important to know that. It's important to decide, well, I'm not the best suited for it, right? Yeah, somebody else is. My friends, this is a wonderful discussion. We are out of time. Yes, we did not get to the recipes. We will try to get to them next time. I know I always think that I have left enough time. And then when it comes down to it, it's kind of like, not so much. Mm-hmm. So we will try to get to the rest next time because, of course, we, as part of a convivial group atmosphere, oftentimes we have food in the room because food is a great leveler. It's not because we're so hungry. It's really because we want people to have something that they're not going to fight about. Wow, that's delicious. How did you make it? How did you learn to make it? Whoa, yeah. And then you'd be surprised. People find out all kinds of things they have in common. People you would think have absolutely, positively nothing in common do. Yes. Yes, they've got a grandchild. I just had this recently. They have a grandchild in the same school. Hey, and they actually go to stuff. They just didn't notice that the other person was there, but now they're going to go together. Not a bad thing, right? Right. Mm-hmm. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.